file at any minute, you know, and tell the employees, hey, stop being so talkative, you know, get to work. And those cameras weren't there to make the workers feel safe. They were there to make them feel like they could be fired at any minute. And that's a condition too many workers are experiencing. And it's emblematic of the ways that, you know, capitalism is an insecurity machine. It depends on all of us being insecure to amass power and profits, and we need something different.
Esther Taylor, thanks so much for being with us, organizer with the Debt Collective, the new book, The Age of Insecurity, Coming Together as Things Fall Apart. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
There's no one-size-fits-all puberty experience. If you're trans, intersex, or non-binary, know that you're not the only one feeling confused. For some intersex people, puberty may start later than age 14. You might experience some of puberty's changes and not others, and your body may or may not go through puberty on its own. There are medicines you can take to help your body start the process, like hormone replacement therapy. Some people decide on hormones or surgeries to help their bodies match up to their gender identity, or how they feel inside about themselves. Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. Time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time once again for Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
It's another Tuesday evening. Boy, they're coming fast, aren't they? We're now into the second week of September. And the day after September 11th.
Early fall, and of course, a day of a lot of stuff. Well, we can get into that, but basically...
The day of a lot of stuff. Is
well,
that
we've reflected.
Official holiday?
Hopefully everyone... Yeah, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's hard. I think it's hard for different reasons for a lot of people, but it
well,
was...
What's the it that we're referring to?
The tragedy, the devastation...
Which one?
That occurred in 2001.
Oh, okay. You could have been talking about... what happened in Libya. You could have been talking about what happened in Morocco. You could have been talking about what happened to the Jets last night. There's so many things that you could have been talking about when you said, okay.
Devastation. Yeah, okay.
Let's get the football out of the way quickly. First of all, the Giants lost 40-0 on Sunday, so that's a real good kickoff to their season. But the Jets, they got this quarterback. They were the whole season was planned around this guy. Four plays, and he's out for the season. I'm sorry. It's not funny. It's not funny. I know that.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not plugged into it. It was a whole big deal
where they did this whole trade thing, and they got this guy who was going to save the team, and literally four plays into the game, and he's injured, and that's it for the season, the whole season. Do you still have to pay the guy? I mean, he got a lot of money, so, you know, he's not going to be doing anything. I mean, I could have gone out there on the field and gotten injured after four plays. And maybe even sooner.
He's just settling in.
Settling into a nice, comfortable bed, I guess. But, boy, I'm sorry. It's not about football.
Yeah, keep that elevated. Anyway.
It's so trivial. But you know what really gets me, as long as we're talking about football, is that people are talking about getting Colin Kaepernick to play for the Jets. And I suggested that like 5 years ago. And no one listens to me. Nobody listens to me. And now they're considering, well, somebody's considering to. Maybe it's not serious. I don't know. But I was suggesting, you know, you got this great quarterback here. How about, you know, he play for the Jets? Or if not for the Jets, at least, you know, for the Canadian Football League or somebody that will accept him, you know, he's a great player. And just because, what, he kneels for injustice, that makes him unacceptable? No, that's just wrong. Okay, I'm done with the football.
I think it's up to him. That may be part of it.
Oh, of course he should have a say in his future. Yeah, I agree with that. That might be controversial, but...
He may have foregone some of that, taken time to reflect on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had lots going on to reflect upon, so of course...
And technically, while this is still football, it's a different kind of football. It's soccer, Spanish football leaders or women's leaders are no longer the leaders. They have to resign in disgrace because of their behavior. And, you know, I don't understand how you feel you can hold on to a position where you're so roundly condemned... And seem to be acting inappropriately, you know, just basically suck it up and try to walk out of there with a little bit of dignity left, rather than trying to debate the whole thing. And boy, it lasted much longer than it should have lasted. But hats off to the women's team there, the world champions, who have, you know, the integrity to fire the coach after winning the World Cup because of bigger issues. Yeah, so let's move on. You know, if you look at women's football, you see how many men are involved in on field team activity. And you don't see the same thing for the men's team. You don't see a lot of women involved in that part of the game. So, you know, there's a lot of inequities here.
Well, and I think there's a lot of different ways to celebrate a win, and I think the reaction has been nothing short of a reckoning within the culture of that institution, because it cast this huge spotlight on the team, which it was a part of the entire women's football movement itself, making great gains on the field, but of course also fighting for equity and pay and so forth, and that's been a huge theme, especially with the American team. But this isn't a phenomenon just that originates in the U.S. It is a global thing, and of course here they are, literally finish this thing, win. It's all cameras are on this guy, and it just, there's no restraint. It's just somehow, I think, a reflection, fully a reflection, not somehow, is of the culture that has occurred there. And I think there's a lot of critique within their own institutions that, like, yeah, we're not actually going to continue winning based on these kinds of injustices, because it's not going to make for a healthy, successful program in the future.
Well, the thing is, you know, it's not like it started right. And of course, we're referring to instance where the game ended, everybody was celebrating, and the players were basically being congratulated one by one by the high-ranking officials. And this high-ranking official, the head of the whole thing, takes one player and kisses her full on the mouth against her will. And the thing is, the women had been complaining about this kind of behavior since well before they won the World Cup, well before then. So it's not like something just happened there. This is what they were talking about. No better example of it than would play out before the entire world. Everybody saw it. So, yeah, you know, it's time to move on. It's time to grow up.
Yeah, and, I mean, put it in context. You had the queen and her daughter?
Yeah.
Princess and her daughter?
I believe it was.
They were right next to the coaching and everyone greeting in the line, and he was on the end of the line. And if you go back and watch the entirety of the thing, not just the clip of the incident with the one player, but if you watch the way he's behaving with all of the players, mm-hmm. it was very uncomfortable to watch, just because you'd watch... I keep saying watch. You see everyone in the line, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really make sense. It's just, it doesn't match the behavior. It doesn't fit the moment. It isn't befitting of the station that he has occupied. And I think there's a lot of context that the players and the people in that system have been able to lend to it.
He wouldn't do that to Ronaldo, I don't think.
Right, and that's the thing. You flip it around. Mm-hmm. Would any male player put up with that? Someone grabbing your entire head? I mean, what does it say
there would be pushback.
About maleness and power and, I don't know. There is so much there to be critiqued, and I forgot himself for sure, but there is,
and, you know, if
there's
he had,
much
he,
more
if
to
he
it.
He had owned that from the start. If he had just admitted, yeah, you know what? This is wrong. My behavior is wrong. Maybe, you know, it would have been considered okay a couple of decades ago, but I have to understand that, you know, we've grown since then. It's a different society now. I know it's hard to say these things. I know it's hard to realize that you're in the wrong, but when you do that, you'll find that people are a lot more forgiving than if you double down and try to fight what society has become. And I say that in a positive way, because nobody should have to put up with that kind of behavior directed against them. Nobody should. And for someone who just won the World Cup to have to put up with that, you know, that how about people who haven't just won the World Cup? What do they have to put up with? You know, these battles are being waged for those people, the people that don't have a voice, the people that aren't on TV, and the crap they have to deal with on a daily basis as far as sexism and inequality and all that. So this is progress, no question about it. Let's not roll our eyes and say, oh, they're overreacting, because they are not. They are simply saying something that I think we all knew was a problem, and let's get past this and not have it be a problem anymore. So,
and there's so much more, like with people's personal space in general, to mm-hmm. say nothing of the sexism involved here, but like, just even hugging and embracing after all of the stuff with the pandemic, I think people just need to acknowledge there's some anxiety around personal space, and to, mm-hmm. I don't know, in all avenues, I think you should just be cautious about the way you appear and come off to people and might not be realizing the ways you're abusing and interfering with their space.
Yeah, well, just be open to the idea that you might not be doing exactly what you think you're doing.
I felt greeting people and stuff, you might have a one way of greeting people. They don't reciprocate. They're not, mm-hmm. A handshaker, or they don't embrace the same way or something like that. you have to be able to pick up on that and know when, and you will fail. Like, social interactions and stuff like that are fraught and can be, full of misinterpretations. So
you fist bump the wrong person, and it's something you'll remember.
Exactly. You know? Just be careful. Yeah. Like, body language is a language.
But on the receiving end, let us be somewhat forgiving as well. So somebody gets it wrong. People are going to make mistakes
all the time. I will.
Yeah, absolutely. I you can guarantee I'll make a mistake. Okay, moving on to non-football news. I think we're done with football. Are we done with football? All kinds of football?
All full contact. Yeah.
The Giants lost. The Jets won, by the way. Even with the guy sidelined, they won. So that should be stated. And it was Monday Night Football, so everybody was watching. So sad. You've been watching the House today, the House of Representatives, the House of Alleged Representatives. Oh, my God, what a bunch of clowns. Kevin McCarthy, you might have heard of him. He's a Republican, by the way. Did you know that? He's a Republican in California. He's the House Speaker. It took like 55 votes to get him confirmed. And he is flimsy stages right now. He said that he's directing House committees, three House committees, to open an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden for no particular reason other than they did it to Trump, so why can't we do it to him? Speaking to reporters during a news conference today, McCarthy said an impeachment inquiry into Biden is a logical next step of the GOP-led investigations that have been going on for months. Usually evidence is a part of that, but apparently they're going to skip that part and just go straight to impeaching the guy they don't like. He said this logical next step will give our committees the full power to gather all the facts and answers for the American public. Wait, what? This sentence doesn't make sense. I'll try that again. This logical next step will give our committees the full power to gather all the facts and answers for the American people is exactly what we want to know the answers. I'm going to read that a third time, and I've never done that before.
Okay, but I'll translate if you
this
need.
Sentence is such a train wreck, I have to appreciate it one more time. I'm going to do slow motion, like if it was an actual train wreck and you see it in slow motion. This logical next step will give our committees the full power to gather all the facts and answers for the American public is exactly what we want to know the answers. See, I think things really go wrong there at the is exactly what we want. That doesn't belong. That does not belong. That sentence makes no sense. You want to interpret it? Are you still able to?
I'm actually, the slower reading gave me a
that
lot.
That helps, right? That's good.
To dig through and stuff. I'm reading it as like give us an opportunity to fabricate.
You know what I would say?
Is.
I would say
what?
This is the logical next step. Leave it at that. That's it.
Yeah, it's a bit wordy.
Yeah.
It's wordy.
It makes no sense.
It's like he's breathing while talking.
Well, look at his expression there.
He's gasping for breath.
I can't show this on the radio, but boy, that expression kind of sums it all up.
Was he being waterboarded?
Look at the NBCnews.com story, and you'll see he's just sort of got this sidelong glance, and it's it's really, he does not look comfortable at all. Anyway, there's a second sentence. I believe the president would want to answer these questions and allegations as well. I'm sure he's looking forward to talking to you bozos in some forum somewhere. House Republicans, McCarthy said, uncovered serious and credible allegations into President Biden's conduct. You know, there's nothing that Biden can do that they will not say is evidence of some wrongdoing. For instance, he was in Alaska for 9/11. Oh, my God, can you believe the disrespect to all the people who died on 9/11 to actually be in Alaska? Okay, listen, there was this gigantic global meeting of leaders called the G20. You might have heard of it. Maybe Republicans you haven't heard about. But, yeah, there is a world out there, and there are other leaders, and they all gathered a couple of days ago in India. Ring any bells? Yeah, G20, he had to go to that. It's kind of, I know Trump probably would have skipped it, but he went to it. And in so doing, he was on the other side of the world. So rather than scramble back to get to New York to just stand around and have photos taken of you, he expanded that to have an important meeting with the leader of Vietnam, which I think is extremely important. And makes sense. Alaska is part of this country. So why not? Why not? They're as affected as anybody else.
They enjoy hearing from him.
The vice president was on hand at Ground Zero, you know, but no, they will jump at anything. No matter what he does or doesn't do, it's going to be an issue. They're just, it really is comical sometimes. This vote to launch an impeachment inquiry will be a first step in the effort to remove the president from office. But it's not a vote on impeachment itself. And apparently that's got the real psychos in the party upset at McCarthy. Let's see if I can find the quote here from Matt Gaetz of Florida. Remember him, right? He floated the idea he would try to force a vote to oust McCarthy if he doesn't press forward with the impeachment, and would even work with Democrats to do so if needed. He reiterated his threat today. He said, on the House floor, "I rise today to serve notice. Mr. Speaker, you are out of compliance with the agreement that allowed you to assume this role. The path forward for the House of Representatives is to either bring you into immediate total compliance or remove you." This is how they speak to each other. Okay, great. You know what? Just let them go. Let them go nuts here. They don't have the votes for even an impeachment. You know, it's not every Republican is going along with this, which is a good thing. But it's just, it's so silly. It really is. Your representative, Kyle, Pramila Jayapal. Did I say it right?
Yes, Pramila Jayapal.
Okay, from Washington, Democratic Congressional Progressive Caucus Chair.
Sounds right, yes.
She said this impeachment is Kevin McCarthy's shiny new object to distract the public from the fact that the GOP can't even pass bills to fund the government. So here we go, headed to an extreme MAGA Republican shutdown while they play political games with a non-starter impeachment. And, that's the thing. They're going to hold the government shutdown, which could take place at the end of this month, above everyone's head, saying that, if we don't get what we want, then we're going to shut down the government. I mean, this is how they operate. It's insane. I don't think any such threat was ever made when Democrats impeached President Trump. You know, it was basically there was evidence. There were all kinds of occurrences that were pointed to, and Republicans basically just ignored all of that, refused to have any witnesses come forward, and made sure it never advanced. Here you're seeing exactly the opposite. There's no evidence, but they're going to just go on procedure and say, yeah, because we can, we're going to do this, or we're going to try to do this. It's a farce. It's an absurd course of events, and I guess we just have to watch it happen.
Yeah, I can't wait to. I mean, how much tape is there of them condemning and talking about impeachment as a preposterous prospect? And what is this over? I mean, it's a farcical exercise. But let's, you know, okay, that's how they want to spend time, it will speak for itself.
Yeah,
I think it's rich that all of a sudden they're fans of impeachment.
Well, we're talking about things that the president's son did. Okay, fine. You know, go after the president's son. Even though there was an agreement in place and he was supposed to avoid jail time and things like that, all of a sudden they decided, or some judge decided, no, this is not acceptable. Okay, fine. So they're going to probably put him in jail for something. But there's no evidence, at least not to this moment, that the president had anything to do with that. So meanwhile, though, you have all kinds of evidence that Trump's people were benefiting from the secret deals with the with Saudi Arabia. $2 billion, I believe, wound up in the hands of some of his kids, I believe.
Yeah, Jared's
Jared Kushner
investment vehicle.
Yeah, but where's the investigation into that? You know, that's a lot more direct evidence that something is up. because he was working for Trump when he got the $2 billion. You know, that's kind of...
I think a lot of this by design is just, like, it doesn't matter if it sticks. It's just that we can say we're condemning this and that there's some phantom process going on. They're really intending to just throw whatever they can out there and let people run with it and hallucinate over their little frameworks and ideas, however fetid.
Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, where Republicans there have enjoyed supermajorities in the legislature, there's a new liberal tilt to the court. It's driving Republican fears of losing their large legislative majorities, which were built under some of the most gerrymandered political maps in the country. You should see some of these. They're real works of art. Republicans are now threatening to impeach a justice who was elected earlier this year who flipped the court to a 4-3 liberal majority, unless she withdraws from any case involving redistricting. How do they even think they can get away with this? They don't want to lose their gerrymandered districts, so they're going to threaten the new justice with impeachment unless she agrees not to be a part of any case involving gerrymandering. Why? Just because she's liberal, and she might vote in a way they don't like. That is not democratic. That's not how the system works.
It's stupid to treat the justice system that way, but also sort of telling about the way they think about the justice system, that it's transactional and the affiliations, and it's a team sport. It's not about the rule of law and logic and justice and itself.
Well, Democratic leaders have decried that threat as political extortion and are mobilizing voters to pressure Republicans in districts won by the new justice and to back down. Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, says impeachment is an act of pure power politics. It's a desperate gambit to avoid accountability to voters who choose their state representatives, their state senators, and their Supreme Court justices. So, four of the past six presidential contests in the state have been decided by less than a percentage point. In 2020, the state Supreme Court, then controlled 4-3 by conservatives, came within one vote of overturning Democrat Joe Biden's nearly 21,000 vote victory over then-President Donald Trump. Wisconsin Republicans hold majorities of 64-35 in the state assembly and 22-11 in the Senate are squarely focused on their own futures. The political maps they drew that helped them win near veto-proof supermajorities are at risk of being overturned under the newly left-leaning Supreme Court. But, you know, you say left-leaning, but I don't know. It just seems like majority rules. That's how the system is supposed to work. And if you gerrymander everywhere, it becomes very easy for the minority to win and to hold power. Should not be that way.
Well, cheaters rule, I think, in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and of course, we've got all these criminal cases against Trump that are going on. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis issued a sharply worded response to House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan of Ohio last Thursday, accusing him of trying to obstruct the prosecution of the racketeering case against former President Trump. And now Jordan, in case you don't know, is a Trump ally. He said last month the committee was launching an investigation into whether the prosecutor coordinated with federal officials when indicting Trump and 18 other defendants for alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in Georgia. All the defendants have pleaded not guilty. Now, in response to this, Willis told Jordan that his request for information on the case, including details about any communications between her office and the Biden administration, was, and this is the quote, an unjustified and illegal intrusion into an open state criminal prosecution, unquote. She argued that Congress lacks the jurisdiction to request information about the state's criminal case into Trump and his co-defendants. Here's another quote. Your attempt to invoke congressional authority to intrude upon and interfere with an active criminal case in Georgia is flagrantly at odds with the Constitution. The defendants in this case, have been charged under state law with committing state crimes, there is absolutely no support for Congress purporting to second-guess or somehow supervise an ongoing Georgia criminal investigation and prosecution. Willis said the goal of Jordan's inquiry was to advance outrageous partisan misrepresentations, adding that she would not be bullied and threatened by members of Congress or others. She said his allegations that the case Trump was politically motivated are unfounded. Chairman Jordan, I tell people often, deal with reality or reality will deal with you. It is time that you deal with some basic realities. And she also said, I really like this. She also said, those who wish to avoid felony charges in Fulton County, Georgia, including violations of Georgia RICO law, should not commit felonies in Fulton County, Georgia. Hey, that's good advice for anybody, you know? Yeah. Now, Jordan also sought information on the Fulton County District Attorney's office's use of federal funds. Willis said her office has used federal grant funding for its intended purposes and warned that any attempts to defund her office would be, quote, vengeful, uncalled-for legislative action, unquote, that would impose serious harm on Fulton County citizens. Now, Willis also shared several racist and violent threats that have been made against her and her staff as a result of the investigation. Here's one of them. One of the less explicit messages reviewed by CBS News, all caps. You touch anyone attached to Trump and we will burn your city to the ground with you in it. Yeah, so this is what we're dealing with right now. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse when trial dates come closer, when people start paying the penalties. Yeah, I think they're starting to sense that.
Yeah, but keep them away from electrical sockets. They'll stick anything in there. I mean, wow. Well, a lot of learning. A lot of learning happening.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about just how bad this situation really really is in many, many ways. Okay. People are freaking out over asylum seekers still. You know, the migrant crisis. You've probably heard a lot of talk about that, and it's shameful. It's shameful to see the way a lot of people are acting. And you know, usually we focus on the right wing, Republicans mostly. But I got to say, you know, Mayor Adams, New York City. What a shame. What a disgrace that is. The things he's been saying recently. New York City is going to be destroyed because of all the migrants that are there. He was speaking to a crowd, I guess, that he thought would be sympathetic to that view. Maybe he was just looking for votes or something, but surely he must know that people repeat things and tell other people what you said. And, you know, I understand frustration if there isn't enough funding to support various things, and I do believe there should be more funding, more federal funding. Absolutely, no question about that. But this is a good thing, to have more people coming to our country, more people who want to help make it a better country. You know, many of us have long decried the inability of asylum seekers to actually start working before their cases are decided. Look, they're here now. They're sitting around. They're looking for something to do. So there is an employment crisis in this country where many places have not opened fully yet after the pandemic. Many people don't want to work certain jobs. Here you have all these people who want to do exactly that. Let's pair the two together. It's so easy, but bureaucracy is getting in the way, and little fiefdoms and nonsense like that. So it's just sad to see to see leaders, to see Democrats especially, just play right into the hands of these hateful Republicans who are so evil that they stick asylum seekers on buses and send them to cities that are run by Democratic mayors. You know, if that's not playing some kind of game with human lives, what is? You know, I mean, it's not fair for one part of the country to have to deal with, you know, an issue like this all on their own. It should be shared by everybody. Agreed. But to do it like that just seems really cold-hearted. But instead of fighting that, I see people fighting each other. I see Adams fighting Hochul. I see Hochul fighting Biden.
There's no cooperation.
It feels like you're doing exactly what they want you to do. You know, turn on each other and turn the migrants into a negative thing. I want to read you a story from the East Village. This is from a blog called Evie Grieve, which is a great look at what's going on in East Village. Trying to figure out the best place to start here. Co-founder and executive director of East Village Loves NYC, Mama Mahmoudi, has been feeding neighbors in need since the pandemic, including asylum seekers. Spoke with several of the former residents of the St. Bridget Church, or actually the school that's next to the church, which wasn't being used for anything. So asylum seekers were housed there. They were housed in smaller groups. See, the lease of that place ends soon, so they had to move some people out. But there were people that were looking to have phones. Actually, they had phones, and they were looking to connect on the Internet. And, this is what's weird. In mid-June, after an unsuccessful effort to get the city to approve Wi-Fi for the space, the city wouldn't approve Wi-Fi for the space with the asylum seekers in it, in the East Village. Father Sean, the NYC Mesh Wi-Fi team, and Paul Gale, a board member at the East Village Community Coalition, mapped out a plan to install equipment on the rectory of the church next door on Avenue B that provided access on the courtyard and some of the north-facing windows of the school and provided the asylum seekers with much-needed Internet access. Without a transparent chain of command, navigating the red tape and bureaucracy to provide the asylum seekers with food and other items was a never-ending challenge. Despite visible proof that the city needed help, they did not appear keen on accepting it. Yeah, the city did not appear keen on accepting help that they needed. Listen to this. Some site staffers said they were reprimanded for assisting with providing aid. I mean, I've come across this in the past where people are, you know, in charge of their own little bureaucracy and they resent when somebody else steps up to the plate and tries to help out.
They're like territorial of their domain.
How ridiculously small it is, or, you know, basically, here are people trying to help. And people in the East Village are trying to help. Listen to this. Locals helped organize several clothing and supply distributions. Many East Village residents graciously donated a variety of items as well as their time. An interfaith coalition of local religious institutions also assembled a distribution outside the school. Cafe Mogador, CMB Cafe, provided food too, as did community group East Village Loves NYC, who later provided meals to asylum seekers at the Roosevelt Hotel in Midtown. Throughout the multiple distributions outside St. Bridget's this summer, many of the asylum seekers expressed gratitude and thanks for the generous help of the East Village residents who showed their support. That is how you handle it. That's how it's done. I'm proud of those people. I just wish more of us were like that. I wish Long Island was like that. I wish we were, you know, stepping up to the plate and helping people who are clearly in need. I don't know what you think these people are. You know, but the way it's portrayed on Fox News and various other hate sites is that they're drug dealers. They're bringing fentanyl to your children and all kinds of nonsense like that. You know, these are school teachers. These are lawyers. These are all sorts of people who are forced out of their country due to all kinds of hells, ranging from gangs to climate change that makes their villages unlivable. So many things, so many reasons, and it's something that we need to be helping with. Now, you may have heard the phrase undocumented students recently as well, and that's because kids who are undocumented are entitled to an education in this country. Did you know that? Yeah, there's over a million undocumented children living in this country. Now, in 1982, U.S. Supreme Court found in a case called Plyer versus Doe that because undocumented children are illegally in the United States through no fault of their own, they are entitled to the same K-12 educational opportunities that states provide to children who are citizens or legal residents. And
this is really an important thing because we found even a lot of the detention of families and family separation stuff, a lot of that really unearthed the conditions that exist at the border and where our system starts stripping and dehumanizing these individuals, denying them food, water, you know, not really stepping up
right
to what they're actually entitled to, and making the conditions unbearable in an attempt to discourage, as though that's a humane way to handle the border. Go on. Sorry.
No, it's fine. So they're entitled to the same K-12 educational opportunities. Now, for this reason, U.S. public schools, and I want you to listen carefully, U.S. public schools may not deny or discourage enrollment to any school-age children, regardless of their immigration status. In addition, such students are eligible for free and reduced-price meals, special education services, and school-sponsored events and activities. If you have a problem with that, the problem is you. It's just, these are kids. These are kids in our country. It doesn't matter why they're here, how they got here, they're entitled to that. I'm gonna just read that again so it's very clear. U.S. public schools may not deny or discourage enrollment to any school-aged children, regardless of immigration status. In addition, such students are eligible for free and reduced price meals, special education services, and school-sponsored events and activities.
And just imagine, in their world, the world of politicians are doing so much against these immigrants, they would love, the only reason that those immigrants are entitled to that still is because those politicians can't actually run on dismantling what those children are entitled to yet. I mean, in their world, there's someday they're gonna be able to just do whatever the heck they want.
Yeah, that's the goal. That's the goal.
They want to be in a world where they can run on this and kind of get away with it because we're all so afraid and beleaguered by the exasperation of the problem. And the other thing I'll just say in hearing this conversation, we better get really good at this now. Because imagine if it was 10 times worse. Imagine if it was 100 times worse. Because we don't get good at handling this. It's not ever going to emerge as something we can get resolved or reverse in any way. So the will needs to be there to really get this down to a science. Like, how do we handle this? Instead of imagining we're already in a world where entitlement laws like that don't exist because someday you're going to get the right political creatures in there that can kind of word it right. No, it's wrong. Like that just denying people the same opportunities at that pivotal age of development is just beyond cruel, and you just you cannot defend it.
Yeah, that's, you said it quite well.
And they resent that.
I want to read a couple more points here. And this, by the way, is coming from the National Association of Secondary School Principals. So you better listen, or you'll be staying after school. Federal law does not require school districts or their employees to report undocumented students to immigration authorities. Doing so would constitute a violation of the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act if information in a student's education reports is disclosed without consent. So, states that are experiencing large increases in their immigrant populations also are experiencing increased law enforcement activities and worksite immigration raids. In 2018, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, greatly increased the number of investigations opened and raids conducted under Trump, leading to a surge in arrest numbers by over 300%. The Urban Institute and the National Council of La Raza have conducted research in the communities where worksite raids raids on immigrants' homes or operations by local police officers occurred in the past 5 years and found that on average the number of children affected was about half the number of adults arrested. In some of the documented cases, school officials were given notification prior to the raids and were able to ensure that students whose parents were detained in the raids had a safe place to go after school. School leaders and teachers reported that they felt a heavy burden helping the students maintain a normal school routine while dealing with the aftermath of the raids. The fear created for immigrant parents and students resulted in symptoms of mental health problems that affected students' academic performance. The other issue is that undocumented students can face a variety of issues, such as English proficiency can be a major barrier. 44% of undocumented students over the age of 5 don't speak English well or don't speak English at all. And other factors that affect these students are fear and concern for them or their families due to a rise in anti-immigrant rhetoric. This rhetoric can often lead to increased bullying from inside the school as well.
I'm over 5 and I don't speak English that well.
Yeah, well.
That sounds rough, though, because it is, I mean, just imagine that. You're in an unfamiliar place, you're stereotyped and treated and, as an outsider, and then throw language into that. And maybe you can't afford the same clothing or meals, or after, you know, you're not there for all the same activities because your parents can't help you after school or something like that. Like, there's just so many aspects to it that can make that an incredibly difficult process to grow up around.
Now, according to the Migration Policy Institute's most recent data, only 25% of undocumented citizens 25 years or older have received a high school equivalent degree. Those youth frequently encounter challenges when applying for college or employment. The College Board estimates that only 5 to 10% of undocumented students actually attend college. Although federal law does not prohibit undocumented students from attending U.S. colleges or universities, most states do not allow them to pay in-state tuition, and they are not eligible for most federal loans, financial aid, and scholarships. So they have no problem taking their money, but they treat them like second-class citizens. Since 2017, there are 21 states or institutions that offer in-state tuition to undocumented students. According to the College Board, the investment in K-12 education for undocumented students pays relatively few economic dividends as long as they are limited in their ability to continue on to college and obtain higher skilled and higher paying jobs that require more than a high school degree. So it hurts all of us to dissuade people like this. And it's sad to see it play out.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the big threat these families are to your young people going into higher education. I mean, give me a break. So many barriers, as though it was already something that was that attainable for anybody, given the cost these days and so forth.
Now, we mentioned
and they already have programs for bringing in high skilled.
We mentioned that there are states that don't allow students to pay in-state tuition and pretty much try to discourage them. No financial aid. I want to read something from State University of New York, where we are, here at Stony Brook, part of the SUNY system. SUNY values diversity, the viewpoints, identities, and histories that our students, faculty, and staff bring to our 64 campuses enhance our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Our founding principles and support for undocumented students guides our actions. You can go to college. Currently, there is no federal law preventing you from attending. SUNY does not and will not consider national origin or immigration status as a factor in admission. We encourage all students, regardless of citizenship status or national origin, to apply for admission, including undocumented and deferred action for childhood arrivals, known as DACA students, graduating from U.S. high schools. Embrace your identity. Do not let fear about your immigration status stand in your way. SUNY will understand your situation and value your perspective and worldview. Use your application as an opportunity to talk about your life in America and how you've contributed to your community. Create a strategy for success. Plan early. Do your research. Ask questions and seek advice from trusted teachers and counselors at your school. Along with giving you guidance, They may be able to put you in contact with other undocumented students who have successfully enrolled in college or with college admission counselors who can help you. Remember, under federal law, school officials cannot disclose personal information about students, including their immigration status, except in limited circumstances where the school has sponsored student visa holders or is compelled to do so by a lawfully issued subpoena or court order. Be sure to keep up with the news about laws that could affect your college plans. At SUNY, you will find safe environments and supportive communities. You'll also find a vast array of resources among our 64 campuses. Whether you're thinking about applying or already a student at one of our campuses, we're here to help you succeed. Now, on the issue of financial aid for undocumented students, not only does the DREAM Act open the doors to higher education, it also provides access to New York State-administered grants and scholarships if you attended or graduated from New York State High School, attended an approved New York State High School Equivalency Program, or received a New York State Equivalency Diploma. You may be eligible for state aid. So, that is how it should be. And I'm proud to say that's what SUNY is, and that's what's embraced here in New York State. And I think that's a model for the rest of the country, and I sure hope to see more such statements.
And it's a piece of a bigger program, a bigger state or regional identity, and as I said, a cooperation, because education is a key component of it, housing, other support services, and networking, all of that plays a pivotal role in having this, as I said, down to a science. Like, we really should get good at this. It should not be some alarm or disaster, unfamiliar disaster response. Like, we know what this is.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So, excuse me, I've got something in my throat today. So, that's a situation that we find ourselves in at this particular juncture.
Yeah, do better. Do better. Everybody, get talking. Let's work out some ways to move forward.
So now this guy who's on the run, and by the way, this is another thing that the right wing is jumping all over, this convicted murderer who escaped in Pennsylvania, and nobody can seem to catch him. I mean, there are just so many things wrong here. The fact that he was able to escape in the first place, the fact that this tight perimeter he was able to get through, the fact that he has gone for, more than 2 weeks now?
Can I just interrupt?
More than 2 weeks.
No, I have something to say. No more prisoners, Pennsylvania, until you find this person. No more. None.
But
no more.
The right wing,
you have too many.
The right wing is jumping all over this saying, why wasn't he deported? Okay, they are showing their ignorance, because even I know that if you're convicted of a major crime in the United States, you don't get deported. You have to serve your time in prison. Then you get deported. All right? And you might not like that, but that's the way the law works. Don't like the law? Change the law. But that is the law. It's not the Democrats' fault or anything like that. It's got nothing to do with Biden's immigration policy or lack thereof.
And if you like that, look up extradition.
So, so now the guy's got a gun, and the reason he has a gun... It's because he ran into this guy's open garage, apparently unaware that the homeowner was hanging out there. But he basically entered his garage while the homeowner was inside it and grabbed a .22 caliber rifle that was just leaning in the corner.
Because Pennsylvania.
The homeowner, of course, had another gun on him and drew a pistol and fired at the guy as he fled with the rifle. Missed him, wasn't able to hit him, but the guy got away with the gun. And what they're saying is there's no reason to indicate that the guy was, being irresponsible with his gun. You had a gun leaning on the wall in your garage with an open garage door. I think you were being irresponsible. Why is that wrong to say? Guns should not be easily accessible. And okay, so you're standing there. You just proved that you there with a gun can't stop this. So maybe your gun should be locked someplace or kept in an area where somebody literally off the street can't just walk in and grab it. I think this is just part of our culture that it's so casual that, oh, look, my gun is just leaning against the garage door there.
At a time. One gun at a time.
This makes it worse. This really does. I know the first thing about guns. I'm the first to say that. 22 caliber rifle, that's not an assault weapon, right? I hope not.
If you unload it on someone, yeah. But no, not really.
Okay. It's not like an AR or whatever.
No, okay. Not big, not as big and not as fast.
But it's a start. He could probably trade up. You know, if it's a video game, that's exactly what he'd do.
Yeah, on this level, yeah. He has to get off the bicycle and steal cars.
The other thing that bugs me is, you know, there's this Ring doorbell camera that shows him knocking on the door of a friend of his. Guys, if you knew he had friends in the area, which apparently you did, why didn't you have a cop, like, in the area waiting for this guy to show up? Because apparently he went to several people that he used to know. You know, so he has known associates in the area. They all should be watched if you're looking for this guy because, yeah, it makes sense. That's what he's going to do. So many opportunities to find him were simply lost. Hey, we're out of time. Write to us, please, otw@2600.com. We'll be back again next week talking about all kinds of other world issues and developments and things like that. For no particular reason, let's pay tribute to Woody Guthrie.
Y'all come back now.
In the words of Phil Lux, good night.
Bye. He walked all over his own growing land, from the New York Island to the California sand. He saw all the people that needed to be seen, planted all the grass where there needed to be green. And now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. He rode and he sang and he rode upon the rails, and he got on board when the sailors had sailed. He said all the words that needed to be said, he fed all the hungry souls that needed to be fed. And now he's bound for glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. He sang in our streets and he sang in our halls, and he was always there when the unions gave a call. He did all the jobs that needed to be done, and he always stood his ground when the smaller men would run. And now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. Pastures of plenty wrote the Dust Bowl balladeer, and this land is your land, he wanted us to hear. And the rising of the unions will be sung about again, the deportees live on through the power of his pen. And now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory. Now they sing out his praises on every distant shore, but so few remember what he was fighting for. Oh, I sing the songs and forget about the aim. He wrote them for a reason, why not sing them for the same? For now he's bound for a glory all his own, and now he's bound for glory.